everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Marvel Chronology episode, and we're going to continue to talk about the Thanos Reading Order. Today, we're covering Captain Marvel number 32 from May 1974, written, illustrated, and colored by Jim Starlin. We have inks by Dan Green and lettering by Dave Hunt. If you remember, at the end of last issue, Thanos had used the power of the Cosmic Cube to become a god. And this one starts off with our heroes, the five, or six rather, that are remaining on Titan, trying to figure out what they're going to do next. And Moondragon says, you know, we failed to stop the man. What chance do we stand against the deity? Marvel responds, I fear the odds of our vanquishing Thanos, quoted by Isaac the Computer. And Iron Man continues the sentence for him, have dropped from 0.04% to just plain zero. We get a little note saying, confused what's going down, true believer. We'll hang in there. We'll explain things as we truck along. But first, action. And as often was done in these 70s and 80s comics, we're going to get a recap. You know, I've talked about it on the podcast before. Marvel likes to throw a paragraph or two inside their front cover or on the front page, sort of recapping. DC doesn't bother. When they do recaps, like in the Brian Michael Bendis books, it's often just a splash page with a bunch of random stuff, and you can kind of jog your memory about what you've read so far. But back in the day, in order to keep it new reader friendly, comics used to often have a, you know, page or two, depending on how complex the story was, of exposition, one of the characters explaining to somebody new on the scene, or just remembering, recalling events to themselves. And that's so often how you would catch up if you were a new reader. A little bit of wasted space if you've been reading all along, but you kind of got used to it. And it was just the way that things were. Now, with the whole people waiting for the trade, I don't know that it's necessarily needed. You know, we don't have as much long-form storytelling. And if you were reading a trade and the story up to that point had gotten recapped five or six times, as you collected the five or six issues, you'd probably be pretty annoyed. And you know, again, you wouldn't need your memory jogged, but also keep in mind that Captain Marvel, or Captain Marvel, the title, was coming out every other month at this time. So maybe people really did need to kind of remember, hey, wait, what happened last issue? And or what's been happening so far? So like I said, it was a pretty common practice back then. But the action that we were promised before we get to that recap happens when Drax the Destroyer fires upon Thanos. And I don't know that it's really Thanos. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, because there is a view screen in the observatory, and we do see Thanos's face on that view screen. It's a transparent image of his face. He has used the cube to basically become one with the universe, you know, just like a god would be, or the god, you know, capital G. He's everywhere. He's everything. He's one with the universe. He controls all. And that's the kind of the level of power that Thanos has ascended to. So Drax, that ever-present one-track mind of wanting to just destroy Thanos, fires upon the image that he sees, even though the rest of the heroes try to tell him to stop. But it's already too late. The one-track mind, the compulsion, the programming, whatever you want to call it, that Drax is infused with, launches, you know, all his power. Thanos, the image of Thanos, then, you know, responds by blasting back at Drax. And before you know it, the whole observatory is collapsing. So the rest of the heroes are kind of wondering how they're going to escape. They ask Eros, Thanos's brother, Star Fox, hey, you know, what should we do? Where should we go? He's kind of confused by all the explosions, and he's not sure where to go or what to do, but Mentor remains calm. You know, this is sort of his backyard, and you know, he created Titan and kind of everything that goes with it. And so he says, this way, hurry, and opens a door that leads to an underground passage out of the observatory right as it's destroyed. So as our heroes are making their way through the passageway, a piece of flying debris hits Moondragon in the forehead and knocks her out, and Marvel said, you know, she's injured, she needs medical attention quickly, this is serious, and Mentor offers to assist her and stay behind while telling the rest of them, there's no time to waste, you've got to get to Isaac and do what must be done. And it's kind of an interesting reason when you think about it. Yes, Moondragon needs help, but Mentor is staying behind because it's what Mentor has always done with Thanos, right? He doesn't take an active role in trying to stop his son. He does have affection for his son and love, and so many times he has turned a blind eye or taken no action at all. He's been frozen by inaction, by his feelings for Thanos, and not wanting to go up against his own son. And we don't even know if he would ever have been successful, but it's an interesting thought experiment to think about. Would Mentor be able to defeat Thanos? Would Mentor have hastened the defeat of Thanos in any situation where Thanos is ultimately defeated but causes, you know, untold damage? Could some of that damage have been prevented? Because Mentor does seem to have an understanding of his son on a level that a lot of other people don't. And so you wonder, is it that Mentor's worried that he'll freeze at the wrong moment because he doesn't want to fight his son? He doesn't want that acrimony with his son. Does it come out of guilt? Because if he fully engages with Thanos, then he has to fully immerse himself in the things that Thanos has done and look at what his son has done, and he's going to be hurt by that? Or is it guilt on his part? Because as we saw in the Jason Aaron Thanos Rising series, Mentor wasn't the greatest father to Thanos and Eros. He, you know, he was so wrapped up in making Titan as good as it could be and in conducting scientific experiments, and he didn't have a lot of time for his sons. And so does Mentor on some level blame himself for the way Thanos turned out? And again, if he were to confront Thanos or take a more active role in resisting Thanos, he then is forced to confront his own shortcomings and failings as a father, and thus is gonna feel bad. Maybe it's some of both, right? Like he doesn't want to raise his fist against his own son. Maybe he does feel guilty. Maybe he feels that he might fail in that moment or hesitate in that moment, and so it's better to provide the knowledge to others and to aid others in an active role in defeating Thanos, and he takes more of a supporting role. Again, it's interesting. I don't know that it's ever been fully explored. If it has, I haven't ever come across it. I think Mentor is a character that hasn't been fully fleshed out in terms of these sort of feelings, and maybe there's just not a big enough interest in Mentor as a character to kind of explore those things. But like I said, it's an interesting thing to think about. So whatever the reason, Mentor does stay behind to help Moondragon. And meanwhile, we see Thanos out outside the massive satellite of Titan, and we see the wreckage of the observatory. And Thanos is thinking, okay, again, Destroyer has dared challenge me, and again, he's tasted defeat. Now I need to eliminate my other enemies. Three remain, and those three being Iron Man, Captain Marvel, and Star Fox, or Eros, Thanos' brother. So as they're headed to the Hall of Science, Eros says, let's cut through the Eternity Tree. It'll save us precious seconds. But as they're flying through the Eternity Tree, Thanos uses his powers to sort of bring the trees to life, and they reach out with their limbs and they try to ensnare our heroes. Iron Man and Captain Marvel are able to avoid it, but Star Fox becomes ensnared, and he tells the other two, quickly flee before you're captured as well. These limbs are too strong for even us to break. And Captain Marvel says, no, we can't leave you. You know, no man left behind. Star Fox like, no, you've got to go, Marvel. You're the only one that stands a chance against my brother. He must be stopped. Go now before it's too late. And he says that and urges and implores them on as he's pulled back by these tree limbs into the shadows. So meanwhile, in the wreckage of the observatory, we see Drax, or actually we see a hand. We don't know that it's Drax necessarily, but we see a hand emerge from the wreckage and then a shadowy figure rise, and we see that it is indeed Drax, saying, "Vengeance such as mine will not rest unfulfilled, so the Destroyer yet lives." And this is a great little sequence of panels here. It's four panels. In the first panel, as I said, we see the wreckage of the observatory. In the next panel, we see a shadowy hand emerge. In the third panel, we see a figure rise up, you know, in the shadows, can't see fully who it is. I mean, we assume it's Drax. It's got the big collar and the big cape. And then in the final panel, we've got a close-up of Drax's face looking very serious. And when I saw this panel and I saw this sequence, it kind of got me thinking of how serious Drax is in this series, the way Starlin has presented him here in this kind of first main story arc, how it's so different than the Drax we get in the MCU, played by actor, former wrestler Dave Bautista. In the MCU, he's really not a character that I enjoy very much. He's super strong, and he does have the same sort of single-focused, one-track mind. And he does tend to talk over the top and bombastic, but they've also added this characteristic or this personality of him being kind of dumb. You know, he's so focused and he's so over the top and takes everything so literally. There's no subtlety to him as a character. And so because of the way they portrayed him and the choices they've made, I guess you really don't have any other direction to go other than humor. And so I guess in that way it kind of works, but I don't really find him very funny, because I think that he's less nuanced and it's kind of an opportunity missed, and it doesn't work for me. And part of it might be I just don't like the way he looks either. You know, the gray skin and the red tattoos or stippling, whatever. Not that I necessarily think that this old school 70s look of Drax might, you know, translate really well. I mean, it might or it might not. I don't know. But he's certainly very purple. You know, he's got the purple head covering. He's got the flowing purple cape with the giant 70s collar. He's got, you know, his shirt is purple. His pants are purple. His swashbuckling boots are purple. You know, he's got the little skull gold clasp that holds his cape and collar together, a gold belt, gold bands. I just don't know how that would translate necessarily to the big screen. I would have liked to have seen them try. I think it would have been cool. Obviously, his costume in the MCU is much different, much more subtle. Maybe that's where the subtlety is, right? It's not in his character, but it's in his costume. I mean, Drax is not the only one where the costumes have been changed and it's not that bright primary color that we see from so many costumes. You know, going back to the first X-Men movies, you know, where they're in the black leather, it just seems to work better. Although I've seen mock-ups of what their original costumes would look like, bright and colorful, and I don't think it looks terrible. I don't know that you can go the full bright color. Maybe you have to mute it a little bit, which I think is usually the step they take. It's kind of the step they've taken in the more recent MCU stuff, where their costumes are reminiscent of their costumes in the comics, but the colors are somewhat muted, so it doesn't come across as looking so cartoony. Maybe the one exception being Superman in the Christopher Reeve movies. His costume was pretty bright, and I think it actually worked. In the more recent Zack Snyder DCU stuff, Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman, it was a darker costume, and I think it didn't work as well because, you know, those movies were dark enough as it was. And maybe it would have been weird to see Superman in a brightly colored costume. It wouldn't have gelled. It would have been incongruous with kind of the darker tone that they took. But all that to say that I love this version of Drax. And I think that even though kind of like the character of Drax in the MCU would be really one note, if you didn't add that factor of humor in there, he would just be this over-the-top, bombastic-sounding character who just focused, in this case, I think he's focused on Ronan rather than Thanos. And so you add that humor in as a little bit of complexity and to make the character a little more relatable. And for comic relief, let's be honest. This version of Drax in the comics, I guess, could come across as being a little one-note as well, because he certainly has been that so far from what we've seen. It's fight against Thanos, do everything I can to destroy Thanos, get knocked down, lose, get up again, fight Thanos, do everything I can to defeat Thanos, be focused on Thanos, help everybody try to defeat Thanos. I get defeated. I refuse to lay down and die. I get up. I focus on Thanos. I want to defeat Thanos, anything. So it does get a little bit kind of one note. The character does lack a little subtlety. And again, even the way he talks and all the dialogue I've talked about before, I think I talked about it last episode, you know, 70s dialogue coming out of the Silver Age at this time. And, you know, Starlin hasn't been writing for a long time at this period. So you can kind of give him a pass if the language comes across as a little flowery or a little bombastic. And you know, you fall into that with Drax as well. But I think it does work for the character. And we do find out Drax's true origin in this issue, which I think adds a level of complexity and gives the character a lot more to do and to feed off of. And like Drax is one of those characters where I think he hasn't gotten his due, because I think people do think of him as sort of one note. But I think in the hands of the right writer, he could be a very interesting character. Obviously, the tough part being, well, if he was created and programmed to just go after Thanos, and if Thanos is not there, then he doesn't have motivation. He doesn't have agency. And I don't know that I agree with that, but you know, and all these thoughts just stem from seeing that one panel and realizing, man, how much of a badass is Drax in this story, and how single-minded and how serious he is, and how the seriousness of him in this story kind of is at odds with what we saw in the MCU. So I think Drax is an underappreciated character. I think that a lot more could be done with him. And I say all that in saying that I haven't read as much of Drax recently. And as I'm going through and getting caught up on stuff, I have read some of his stuff in the current, like, Infinity Wars by Jerry Dugan and things. And so I think he has been taken advantage of to some extent in more modern stories. But he's a character that I probably need to do a deep dive on and do like a spotlight and read all of Drax, like a Drax reading order, and see where it leads and see how that compares to who Drax is in the MCU. So meanwhile, getting back to the story, Marvel and Iron Man have reached the Hall of Science, with Marvel saying apparently Thanos hasn't gotten used to being a god yet, because he's handling situations one at a time, when really he could be handling all of them at the same time within the space of a heartbeat. And so I think the fact that Thanos' sanity hasn't caught up with his level of power, his sanity's been shaken, it might work in our favor. And Iron Man says, well, that's great, but we sacrificed three people to get you here to this Hall of Science. What was the point? And so Marvel says, well, remember, this is where the supercomputer Isaac is housed. He's the most sophisticated computer in the universe. And if anybody has a chance to help us out and to figure out a way to defeat Thanos, it's Isaac. And not only that, but I did manage to palm this when everything went sideways and Drax and Thanos started fighting, and he shows Iron Man the cosmic cube. So Iron Man's like, well, like, that, great, command that thing to stop Thanos right now, and then, you know, problem solved. And Marvel's like, well, I already tried that, obviously, but it appears that Thanos drained the cube of all its power, and it's not working, but it may still be of use to us. What we need to do is we need to review what we know so far and try to see if there's a weakness that Thanos has that may be revealed. So Iron Man's like, okay, well, he kidnapped us from Earth, and he imprisoned us along with Mentos and Eros, and he planned on killing us, but first he decided that he wanted to play sadist. And Marvel's like, well, I don't know that was his intention necessarily. And Iron Man's like, well, he flaunted his space fleet that was headed to Earth, and, you know, that's what I would call rubbing salt into a wound. And Marvel's like, yeah, but it's almost like he was boasting. The same thing when he showed us how he had imprisoned Cronus the Supreme Titan. And even after we escaped, instead of killing us, he just disabled us again so that we could witness him transform into a god. It's like he wanted an audience. He brought us here. He kidnapped us. He put us in stasis. He gloated. And then we escaped, and then he defeated us again. But again, instead of killing us or destroying us, he imprisoned us. He captured us, and he gloated. And he wanted somebody to see him turn into a god. He wanted somebody there to feed his ego and watch him, you know, basically turn into and gain control of the whole universe. Apparently, you know, what fun is there to be a god if there's no one there to watch? And so that might be the weakness. That's what we need to feed on, his ego. Now we just have to figure out how to do that. But unfortunately for Captain Marvel and Iron Man, their time has sort of run out, because Thanos has once again directed his attention toward them. And instead of, once again, just destroying them, he instead creates beings out of the concrete and steel from the floor of the science hall, with Captain Marvel even remarking on it, saying, "This confirms my suspicions about his sanity. Instead of just blasting us into oblivion or blinking us out of existence, he's creating these demon-like creatures from the floor. And they're super fast and they're super strong." And so they do very quickly start to overwhelm Captain Marvel and Iron Man. And they're you know, for the size of them, they're very quick, they're very fast and super strong. And even when Captain Marvel manages to punch his fist through one, it doesn't stop it. It just keeps coming. And Marvel's like, how do I kill these things? How do I destroy these creatures that aren't even really alive, right? Like, he manages to keep them at a distance by, you know, punching and moving away from them, but there's no way to really stop them. And as he looks over at Iron Man, he sees Iron Man's being overwhelmed, and he thinks, well, his armor's going to be ripped off of him, and he's going to be slaughtered. I've got to do something. And so he rushes over and he rescues Iron Man, who is unconscious, all the while still thinking, you know, I can shove these demons away, but they can't be slain. And it makes, you know, little difference if I can keep my distance, because eventually they're going to defeat me. You know, I can pull Iron Man to safety, but they're not going to stop until I'm dead and Iron Man is dead. And so, meanwhile, out in the galaxy, as it were, we see the disembodied, transparent head of Thanos, the manifestation of his personality that remains, speaking to Death, asking her, "Are you pleased? I'm presenting you a gift that, you know, no other lover could ever match. I'm giving you the universe, and all those who stood against me before have been defeated. They fall like wheat before the scythe." And just as he begins laughing, we see a voice off screen say, "No, evil one, not I." And then we get this incredible two-page spread from Starlin showing that it's Drax, who has once again discovered where Thanos is and is attacking. And it is kind of interesting. Like I said, it's a great two-page spread. You know, Drax is there in all his muscle glory and that beautiful purple costume that I described earlier. We've got Death standing on top of this rocky pillar observing, and Thanos's transparent disembodied head there made out of stars, with Drax firing a power blast that then explodes against Thanos's head. And you do kind of wonder, it's like, okay, well, this is kind of a disembodied Thanos, so what exactly is the power blast like blasting against? But you can't think about it too much, because it is just a glorious piece of artwork. Planets in the background, Starfield, Starlin at his best, and Thanos is kind of annoyed and says as much. "God, Destroyer, will I ever be rid of your annoying insanity? You know, you're less than a flea to me. I'm all-seeing, I'm all-knowing, I'm all-powerful. Thanks to the Cosmic Cube, you're never going to stop me. And you'll always fall before me." And the Destroyer, you know, refusing to give up, that single-mindedness, that one-track mind, saying, "Never, never, never." And Thanos has had enough. He's like, "You know what? It's this insane hatred of me, this illogical, insane mind of yours that is your weakness. Like when we fought on the mental battlefield over the cosmic cube, it was your mind that defeated you. That's how I was able to defeat you, because you've always hated me. You don't know why, and it's a weakness. And I you know what? I think I'm going to have some fun. I think I'm going to actually restore your full memory and watch you shatter before my eyes once you realize the truth about yourself. And so Thanos reaches into Drax's mind and says, probe back, Destroyer, past the barriers, back, and you'll see that 10 years ago, 1953, a place called Nevada in the desert, a lonely highway at night, completely empty, or so you thought, but actually I was there in my spacecraft. You were there. You had just left from seeing your singing idol, Elvis Presley, in Vegas. You were returning to Los Angeles with your wife and your daughter, your wife Yvette, your daughter Heather, and yourself, real estate agent Arthur Douglas. And it was my first scouting mission to Earth. And, you know, I was just beginning to put together my plans to find the cosmic cube and, you know, do the things I needed to do to take over Earth. And I made a slight miscalculation, and since I didn't want anybody to know about my plans, absolute secrecy was a must. And because of this miscalculation, there happened to be you and your family there on the road, and I couldn't take any chances. And after all, you were just humans. You were expendable. So we fired upon your car. There was a crash. Your wife was killed immediately. You know, you succumbed relatively quickly, with myself and my assistant Sardoon being the last beings that you ever saw. You know, we watched you die. Unknown to us at the time, for myself and Sardoon, your daughter Heather somehow miraculously escaped and wandered off, and she was later found and brought to Titan and became the woman known as Moondragon. And we saw all that in Daredevil 105, as Roy Thomas is happy to remind us. But while your soul and the soul of your wife were leaving that existence and moving to the next one, a mentor reached out, my accursed father. He needed a warrior to fight me, and he called upon Kronos to intercept your soul, and it was then fused with this earthen-formed body of Drax the Destroyer. And as Drax has been forced down to the surface of a planetoid from kind of the impact of regaining these memories, he's thinking, yes, I remember it all now, and even more, things you haven't told me. Mentor blocked these memories because he thought it would cause me pain to realize that my wife had been killed, and at the time they believed his daughter had been killed as well. But that was a mistake, because that mental block, as Thanos himself said, was a weakness. It's what allowed Thanos to defeat him before. And so Drax gets to his feet and says, hear me, Thanos, you failed. I'm not a shattered being. By replacing these memories, you did not, defeat me or have me wallowing in self-pity of remembering my past. If anything, you reminded me that you murdered my wife, you stole my daughter's childhood, and from that, I became this. And I hate you more than ever, Thanos, and I hate you because I know. Like, now my hatred has meaning and has reason. So if anything, Thanos may have helped Drax out, because now he is not going to – he still has the hatred, but now he's not going to have that emptiness behind it. So I think Drax, in this instance, it's made him an even more formidable foe. So he says, I'll never be defeated. I'll always come after you. At best, you can temporarily restrain me, but I'll always break free and I'll always pursue you, and eventually you'll pay. And he flies up off the asteroid or the planetoid he's on, but Thanos is not there anymore. So whether he disappeared completely or he's just gone for now, I guess we'll have to wait and see. So meanwhile, back on Earth at the Avengers Mansion, the Avengers are wondering what they can do to try to get in touch with Captain Marvel and Iron Man. They're worried, obviously, about Thanos and what his plans are. And while they're trying to strategize, they get an alert that Thanos' space fleet, the one that Captain Marvel mentioned, is approaching Earth. And so it's their duty to defend Earth, and they all head out to outer space to try to stop Thanos' fleet. Meanwhile, back on Titan, as Captain Marvel continues to fight against the inhuman and unkillable concrete and steel demon constructs that Thanos created, we see this robotic figure in these black and red robes with a starfield on them observing. And this robotic figure says, commencing report, Warrior Marvel observed in the midst of battle with demon-like creatures. And Captain Marvel is kind of shocked to see him say, what is this? Another threat from Thanos? And the figure responds, no, I'm no threat to anyone, Warrior Marvel. And Captain Marvel takes kind of umbrage at being called Warrior. He says, well, I believe you, but I've got more pressing matters fighting off these beings that Thanos created, but you're wrong to call me a warrior. You know, I was raised as a warrior and combat trained by the Kree, but there have been so many changes since then. So we're getting a little recap here of what's been going on, just like we did previously with Iron Man and Captain Marvel reviewing kind of the story so far to find a weakness for Thanos. And we're being reminded of the metamorphosis that Captain Marvel went through in issue 28, where he gained the cosmic awareness. So he says, you know, a warrior fights because he was ordered to, like Captain Marvel himself used to be ordered to by the Kree, or because he is paid, or because he wishes to further a limited cause, you know, for a nation or a planet or even a region. But I protect the universe now with my cosmic awareness because I feel like I'm one with the universe and the universe matters to me. And force and violence, they always have to be the last possible solution. And you only should ever use enough force or violence to resolve the situation. To use more than that would make you no better than the people that Captain Marvel is fighting against, like Thanos, because then you're going beyond its destruction and violence for the sake of itself. And so we're getting a reminder here by Starlin of the change in Captain Marvel, how he's become so much more zen, for lack of a better term, and he's not kind of that violence-driven Kree warrior who was always looking for a fight. And I think it goes into the time period coming out of the 60s and 70s when people were trying to have a little bit more self-awareness, I think. So Starlin, very much a product of that. And I think this change in Captain Marvel is what made him such a beloved character, because Starlin imbued him with this philosophy that then made him so much more than what he was before, you know, something to aspire to, and was revered by other heroes for that reason as well. So just, again, goes to show the indelible mark that Jim Starlin left on Captain Marvel. So as he finishes explaining this to this robot, he says, okay, now that I'm done with that, who are you? And the robot says, well, I'm Isaac. And Captain Marvel's like, what? No, that's a worldwide computer that runs Titan. Like, there's no time for joking. That can't be who you are. He said, well, this unit that you're observing is a functional hologram that's being projected by the computer in a humanoid form. No humor intended. I am Isaac, and I'm here to record the war in which you're engaged. And Captain Marvel's like, well, why? Like, who are you working for? Well, I'm an open computer, so I work for all. Marvel's like, well, does that mean you have to answer anything I ask? Because I do have a relevant question. How can I defeat these creatures? And Isaac responds, well, you can't. These are non-living demon creatures. They're pre-programmed to continue to fight until you don't exist anymore. As long as you exist in this universe, they'll continue to fight. And Captain Marvel's like, great to hear. Like, how am I going to get my way out of this one? But then he thinks, wait, as long as I exist in this universe, well, what happens if I leave? What happens if I go to the negative zone? So he's like, well, it's a gamble, but I don't really have much choice. Let me switch places with Rick Jones, and then I'll no longer exist in this universe, and maybe that's how I can stop fighting these creatures. So he does just that, knowing if he's wrong, he's just doomed Rick Jones, but it works. He switches places with Jones, and the other creatures immediately freeze in place and stop fighting. So he picks up the cube that Captain Marvel had dropped on the floor. And he says, okay, Isaac, I want some transportation out of there. I need some time to think and some breathing room. So send me back to Earth, but be sure you keep in voice contact. So if I need you, you know, you'll be aware of it. So he transports Rick Jones back to the Avengers mansion, and Jones is standing there holding the cosmic cube, thinking, okay, this cube is worthless. Thanos used up all its power. Marvel obviously thought we could get some use out of it, but what? And while he's thinking about that, we see the head of Thanos show up again, and Jones hides the cosmic cube, thinking, well, I'm not going to get a chance to think about that right now, but if it's true what Marvel and Iron Man kind of puzzled out about Thanos' ego being his biggest weakness, maybe it's time for Rick Jones to play boy psychologist, and maybe we can use that ego against him. So he calls out to Thanos saying, well, if it isn't a divine baboon, which immediately gets under Thanos' skin, with Marvel communicating to Rick Jones, hey man, be careful. We don't want to get him angry. And Jones is like, no, that's exactly what we want. We want to get him angry. But you can only get angry at so many respects, so we're not going to get angry at Thanos. And again, immediately Thanos' reaction, you're insignificant, you're a dust mote. And Jones is like, okay, great. I this is exactly what I want. Thanos blowing his top. And Jones continues to egg him on, saying, yeah, you think you're so big, you think you're so powerful. You never even fought Captain Marvel, except when Titan was falling down around his ears. I think you're scared. You know, you have all this power, and you could wipe us out with an eye blink. But if you were on our level again, man, Captain Marvel would stomp all over you. So clearly Jones trying to get Thanos to voluntarily give up some of his power, because that might be their one chance. And it seems to work here, because Thanos loses it, saying, that's preposterous. I'm Thanos Rex, Emperor of the Universe. I'm all-knowing. I'm all-powerful. And you're nothing, and your alter ego's no greater. Call him back from the negative zone. Please, bring forth your champion. I will demolish him molecule by molecule. And as he says that, the physical manifestation of Thanos appears in the Avengers mansion, with Rick Jones kind of cowering away from Thanos, thinking, well, I sure hope I haven't screwed it up for Marvel, because if I have, then I've probably doomed him and me. And so, once again, the ego of Thanos may prove to be his undoing. It's his fatal flaw. It's his Achilles heel. And you would think, gaining this all-knowing, all-encompassing power from the cosmic cube, Thanos would be able to realize what a mistake this is. You know, he is a very intelligent being, but again, blinded by ego. And the other thing I do wonder, though, is that, okay, if Thanos is willing to abdicate the power he gets, the strength of the cosmic cube, if he's not going to actually use any of his powers, if he's actually just going to fight Captain Marvel hand to hand, if he still has the knowledge, I think he's going to be successful in defeating Captain Marvel as well. Because he wouldn't just have the knowledge of and perfect recall of every fight, physical altercation he's ever been in. He would remember all fights of anybody from all time. It reminded me of a recent comic that we talked about, Return of Wolverine number 5, where Wolverine is fighting against Persephone's brother, Zagreus, and he's losing the fight until he releases all his different personalities and memories, and then remembers all 10,000 fights he's been in, and then he wins the fight. So same thing here, right? Like Thanos, if he's all-knowing, then he would know what Captain Marvel was going to do in the fight, you know, physically, where the punch is going to come from, how he might move. He would know it before Marvel himself even knew it. So he really does have to give up a lot here, Thanos, that is. He's got to give up the all-knowing, the omniscience, as well as the power, the omnipotence, if he wants to really fight on Captain Marvel's level. But you would think a being like Thanos would always cheat, right? He'd always leave himself an out if he started to lose. But again, it's kind of interesting, and it's I think I talked about it in the last issue, where when you talk about the level of power that Thanos has, it does kind of not make sense that he doesn't just wink these people out of existence. But I'm glad that Starlin in the story gives us a reason for it, gives us an explanation, even if that explanation is that Thanos is, for all his intelligence, is basically a dumbass when it comes to common sense. Because really what he should do is he should just snap his fingers and wipe anybody who would ever become a threat to him out of existence, right? So he doesn't do that, and we'll see what happens. The story is said to continue in the Avengers. I think that's issue 125, which we'll cover on the next episode, where they're going to fight against that space fleet of Thanos, and then we'll come back to Captain Marvel and Thanos and see if Captain Marvel is able to ultimately defeat him. So this was a really, really fast-paced episode. Gorgeous Starlin art, especially, like I said, that the two-page spread where Drax confronts Thanos and blasts him, that four-panel sequence where we see Drax climb out of the rubble is also a really, really great sequence. The final panel with Thanos there confronting Rick Jones in the library at the Avengers Mansion is another great panel. So just gorgeous art. You know, you kind of wonder how great this would look if it were to be redone with today's kind of technology, printing technology. I wouldn't just want you to go back and recolor this. Obviously, it's on newsprint, so the colors aren't as bright and they don't pop as much as you would hope. But it's always weird when you get newer, white, good quality paper and you recolor these old books. They're so primary, it loses a lot of the shadow and the texture. So that doesn't work either. You would basically need to go back to the original pencils of this and then ink it with today's inking technology and color it with today's color technology and then print it with today's printing technology. And it would be really expensive and super time consuming, but I for one would love to see it. And that's not to say that there isn't a charm to the way these older books look. They're of their time and they are, you know, what they are, and I'm fine with that. But I this is Starlin at the height of his powers, and I would love to see the art look a little cleaner and not be beholden to the old style of printing, which again does bring some charm and some texture to the story, makes it a little more visceral. But I still would love to see this stuff in a more modern context. When I think about that kind of Starlin art, my brain always goes to Breed, his title from Malibu. I think he did three different volumes of it under their Bravura imprint. And that stuff, man, that is some great Starlin art. Beautiful, cosmic, demon-like stuff. If you're familiar with it at all, you know what I'm talking about. It's absolutely spectacular. So, but yeah, just a little thought I wanted to throw in there about the artwork, because it is really, really classic Starlin stuff. So I think that's going to do it for this episode. As always, I want to thank everybody for joining me. Hope you guys are really digging this Thanos reading order, getting a chance to learn more about Thanos as we continue with the Marvel chronology. So as always, thanks for joining me, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.